Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule, it's just whenever I finish a book, I do the review stick up here on the podcast feed for you people to listen to. Little bit of a different, little bit of experimental kind of podcast tonight. First of all, this is quite a short book that I've read, and I've been reading it over the last few days. I've been having a very lazy few days working on this cruise ship because I finished my job, my actual work that I was contracted to do on the third night of the cruise, and then I have 7 sea days in a row where I don't have anything to do, no responsibilities, nothing at all. So I've been taking it very easy. Normally I'm writing a lot or doing lots of different projects, but 7 sea days in a row I've taken it. Let me put it this way. I've been drinking quite a lot, and I'm actually drunk as I'm doing this now, and I've made no notes at all about the book that I'm going to review. And actually, to make it even stranger, I call this a science fiction book review podcast. This book is not science fiction, it's fantasy. And it's not even a book, it's an audio production only, from audible.com. Let me just go to the page here. This is from Audible Frontiers, and it's a special project called The Alchemist and the Executionist, by Pablo Bacigalupi and Tobias S. Burkell. And this is a really strange thing, because I was sent an email about this from the Audible, the actual, the service then. It said, hey, maybe you'll be interested in this book. And it's special. It's just this, only on Audible. You can only get it on Audible. You can't buy it as a paper book or anything like that. And I was like, Tobias S. Burkell and Pablo Bacigalupi. I thought, yes, I am very interested in that. First of all, I really enjoyed the Wind-Up Girl that I read or listened to on Audible earlier on this year. Really enjoyed that. And I was really looking forward to checking out some other work by Pablo Bacigalupi. And so I thought that'd be interesting. And also, I read Tobias S. Burkell's, one of his, I think, his first novel. And I thought it would be, I want to check out another one of his pieces of work, but I wasn't so much interested in checking out other stuff in that same world that he was writing in. I'm not sure. It's just because I enjoyed the book in so many ways, but then it was let down in other ways. But I thought I'd give him another chance, so I thought this would be a great way to do it. Now, the idea is this is a short novel, but it's like two interwoven novellas set in the same world, some small overlaps in characters and events, but otherwise they pretty much bashed out the world together between them. This is actually what they say at the beginning of the thing. They both say, hey, one of them says, hey, I'm Tobias, and this is my idea behind the story, and the other one goes, yeah, and it was really great working with the other guy and putting together this world that we had and coming up with all the ideas and then going away and writing the two different stories. And so you've got two novellas put together into a good novel size. I mean, it's not actually that long. It says 5 hours and 19 minutes, so it's actually quite a short novel, but the way that they've both got these interlinked stories, and it starts off and you're reading, you get a bit of The Executionist by Tobias S. Burkell, and you get that for a chapter, you like listen to that for an hour, and then you go across and listen to, you know, part of The Alchemist for about 40 minutes, and then back again to The Executionist, and you keep swapping between these two characters and these two main storylines, and I was quite interested about this. I think because it's strange actually, because even though I can't remember Tobias S. Burkell's book that I read. It was The Crystal Rain, that's what it was called. And when I was reading that, I thought it was actually, the book itself was more interesting than it was good. So I was actually more interested in Tobias S. Burkell as an author and the kind of style that he had. So I actually started subscribing to his blog, and I've always been reading his blog, and he's quite an interesting blogger. He talks about writing and talks about, his life and, him being ill and all these different things that go on in his life. And it's quite an entertaining read. So when he mentioned it as well on his blog, I was like, yeah, and that's why I was looking out for it. So yeah, let me get straight into it, really. That's the reason why I read it. Spam does work if you're interested in the thing that the spam is trying to sell. So the world of the book, it's a fantasy book, like I said. It's not a science fiction. But again, that was one of the reasons why I'm interested in it. I'm reading a bit more fantasy more recently because I'm actually... I'm writing a fantasy novel at the moment. I say I'm writing it. Actually, I've taken some time off from writing it, but I'm really enjoying writing it. And I thought, well, I'll get a bit more taste for different fantasies. So I think actually I'm going to be reviewing two fantasy books in a row, because the next one I'm going to be doing is called The Lies of Loch Lamora by Scott Lynch. That'll be the next book that I finish. I'm almost finished on that. But this, because it was so short, I listened to it just over the course of a few days while sitting by the pool and in the jacuzzi there on the top deck. So let me get to it here. I was looking at my notes. I don't have any notes. It just says world. So let me talk about the world. The idea is that in the past, there was lots of people using magic, and they've got, you know, talk about the past in the book of people, you know, castles in the sky and floating things and people riding around on magic carpets and everyone living forever because they can heal everything. However, there's a big downside to the amount of magic that is practiced, because each bit of magic that people practice, it encourages the growth of a kind of bramble. It's described in quite a lot of detail, because this is like the main threat in the book as well, because every time someone says a magic spell, a bit more bramble grows, and everybody is using brambles all the time. Not everyone's using brambles. Everyone's using little bits of magic all the time, and big magic is banned, and even little bits of magic is banned. And if you get found out that you've been casting spells I think the way that they cast spells is they write stuff down on a bit of paper, and then they say it or deliver it in some way. It's never actually described that clearly, but if you've been using magic, then you have broken the law, and because only a few people are allowed to use magic. You got this one magic guy who's, let me put it this way, most of the action, or in both stories, the action starts off in a city, and this city is run by a mayor, and the mayor's right-hand man is the magic guy, and between the two of them, one holds all the power of the army and the way that the city is run, and the other one is the magician. He's the only person who's authorized to use magic at all. So the two of them are sort of running the place with an iron fist, and if you're caught doing any magic yourself, the punishment is death. And this is where the executionist comes in. So everyone executioners come in. Everyone gets their head chopped off if they're discovered doing magic. And that's pretty much the setup of the world. Everyone knows that magic exists, and lots of people practice it. But there's a big downside to it. And now the entire countryside, like whole empires, have been wiped out. And as the brambles spread across the countryside, everyone sort of flees before it and ends up in this slum village across the river from this main city where where a lot of the action takes place. So that's on a broad overview, that's the shared setting that Pablo and Tobias came up with, and then they set off their own stories. Now again, just get onto I'll start with Tobias's story, because his story gets first. He wrote the story called The Executionist, and he says, the reason I wrote this story is because I think it was at a convention, and someone did a workshop, and they were saying, hey, why is it that all women in fantasy, if they're a hero, why is it they're all young and buxom women and very capable young women and sort of doing all that kind of stuff, who are like, yes, I'm going to be the equal to a man, and they do that. They say, where are all the middle-aged older women as the main heroes and the protagonists in these fantasy stories, or in other stories as well? And Tobias was like, that's an interesting thing. And then he saw this picture of an executioner, and he thought, well, wouldn't it be interesting if the middle-aged heroine is going to be an executionist. So that was the spark of his story, and of course that's why they probably between them came up with this very interesting setup. It was quite interesting to read or listen to the introduction that they both gave to it, that how they came up with the ideas for the story. So that the idea is that I can't even remember the woman's name, but she's got she's married to a drunkard husband, and her father is the executioner. And she's got two sons. And what happens is that her father is really ill, but he gets summoned to do an execution, but can't do anything. So in the end, he actually says, yep, I'll be along in a minute. But then, collapses, and in the end, what has to happen is that the woman has to go, and she puts the hood on, and she goes to become an executionist or an executioness herself without anybody knowing it, because that's the only income that they have. And because the brambles are spreading across the fields, it's really difficult to get any food. You know, there's not a lot of food, and everyone's really struggling to get by. So that's what she does. And that sets up a series of events. And then what happens, the raiders come along and raid the Lesser Cromulon, or whatever the name of this city is, and take her sons away. So then she has to go and track down her sons. So she becomes this hero figure on a quest with her executionist axe. And it's a very interesting story. I don't want to give too much away, but of course she goes off on a quest away from this city. Meanwhile, in Pablo Bagaculupi's kind of thread of the story, they're connected by the setting and by a few events and characters that are mentioned in or featured in both stories. The alchemist is a guy who's trying to work out a way to fix the problem of the brambles. He works out that, you know, if I use magic to get rid of the brambles, that doesn't help, because using magic to get rid of the brambles, it doesn't, you know, it's like a you just get more brambles. It's like the whole kind of what I'm trying to say, sort of like second law of thermodynamics. You can't ever lose any energy, so every time that you get rid of brambles with magic, it creates more brambles than you actually get rid of in the first place. But alchemy, by using the, you know, different metals and different substances and mixing them together in different ways, he can get magical results. And what he does is he works out that using this big contraption with pipes and funnels and boilers and, you know, steam and all these different kinds of stuff, by mixing together different varieties and different substances, he can bind a certain substance with the bramble, because the substance is attracted to magic and these brambles are the result of magic. And then he burns it, and it burns the brambles up completely in a way that nothing else can match. So that's his story. So he goes to the mayor and says, hey, check it out, we can clear the brambles. And now that we can clear the brambles, everybody else can, we can do magic, and we can fight back the brambles, and we can do magic at the same time, and it's all going to be great. However, things take a turn for the worse in that way, because the mayor, who you never really trusted in the first place, has different ideas. And again, I don't want to spoil anything further. I've told you like the first like quarter of both of the stories, and things go in a different direction than the alchemist ever thought it would. And again, just like the executionist, she is trying to save her two children, save her two sons that have been kidnapped by these raiders, these pikies that they're called. I think pikies or pikers or something like that. The alchemist also has his family, his daughter as well. And at the same time as he's trying to do this, to come up with this invention to beat back the brambles, he is actually using a little bit of magic to save his daughter, because his daughter's got lung problems. And so he's all the time, like, without letting anybody know. Of course, without letting anybody know, because if somebody knows that he's using magic to cure his own daughter, he would come underneath the executioner's axe himself. So it's this really, both stories are talking a lot about sort of like family responsibility and what you would do to save your sons in one case, or save your daughter in another case. And so there's some, like I say, the stories aren't just linked by being in the same place. There is that another sort of thematic link there as well. The things I really liked about both of the stories is that this is like adult fantasy done really well, because often fantasy, it's a bit light, but then if it wants to be adult, you know, like Richard Morgan does sort of like adult fantasy, and you just put in lots of sex and swearing and stuff. There's no swearing in this at all. However, it's a very dark feel. It doesn't start out that way, but because you think, oh, it's going to be this strange thing, but then you realize, actually, no, this is a story about an executionist or an executioner. And once she gets tricked or gets forced by her father into going to execute the man for the first time, it's quite graphic, and it's very cleverly written. And all the way through her story, she goes up against people, and it's quite graphic violence all the way throughout. But like I say, it's not like a young stable boy who goes off and becomes king at the end of it. It's not that kind of thing. Like I say, it's like conceptual fantasy done really, really well. And again, I would love to read more of this. It was a perfect length. I think actually if they'd have tried to, like, extending the stories out further than they did, it wouldn't be, you know, it might not work. But what I'd really love, like I was saying before about in a previous podcast about how you should get other people to, like, rewrite stuff or share a world, it would be great to have other people, like, write their own stories taking place in this bramble-filled world, because I think there's quite a lot to do there. Anyway, so yeah, there's quite a lot of violence. What else was I saying? Oh yeah, not just violence, but it's sort of like things take dark turns in especially in the alchemist thing. It's like you're thinking, oh, this is going to be great, he's going to be the hero, and then actually, no, things go in a little bit of a different direction. And one story is filled very much with despair, and the other story is more heroic. But you know, you're never quite sure which of the stories is going to lead to the happy ending and which one isn't going to lead to the happy ending. And it's really strange that within the last paragraph of both of the stories, again, they took a different, or no, I say the last paragraph, maybe like it would be the last few pages of each of the different stories, like these alternating chapters that they go through. Suddenly one of them turns around and you're like, oh, wait a second, that's just like this other bad situation in this other story. And then the other one that you think is going to be more heroic or not, suddenly that takes a different turn as well. I just thought the stories were very well done. They'd obviously, I think actually what you can do, or what happens with these two authors working together in this way, that they really sort of spur each other on in a way, and they complement each other in a way that I've not seen before. Well, mainly it's because I don't think I've ever read like two stories written in the same world at the same time and released at the same time like this. I know Tobias Espekel did something, it says here on the Audible website, he did the, what was it called? Oh, the Metatropolis. I've not read that, but I know there was like four or five authors all writing in the same world. Maybe I should check that out, actually, because I actually quite enjoyed this. But like I say, these two stories, one is very much an adventure story, very much a heroic story, like a sort of, not a classic hero story, but it's a... what am I trying to say? Just like, for example, going on a bit about the writing style, is that Tobias Espekel, it's like, okay, there's this executioner, she's going here and she learns this and she does this and she does that and she does this. Whereas Pablo is much more like, okay, we're going to rejoin this 2 months later and I'm not going to fill you in all of the details, but a lot of stuff is happened and you're just going to have to catch up. And he doesn't, it's not like a blow by blow account of all that much. I mean, he does do that in a way, but it's much more of a literary style. He's talking a lot more about like the inner emotions and the feelings and the minutiae of things that are going on in this world, whereas Tobias Espekel is more writing in sort of like in a broader stroke, in a sort of much more like it's like one adventure story and one sort of political intrigue kind of story as well. And that they, like I say, both very good. The characters in both of them, that's what I normally get to. That's my only note here. It says world, story, characters. Yeah, so the characters in both of them are very strong. I think definitely because the executionist is sort of like a concept, and you can see that Tobias, he was going, right, okay, I want to write this character. And he sort of had this character brief that he had to write to, and it was done very well, but it seemed in a way a little bit restrained, or a little bit, not forced, but it's like he knew, like he had something that he wanted to do and he does it. But I thought it might have been nicer if he would have had given himself a little bit more freedom with this character. But what the character does do and the journey that she does go on is actually thought very interesting. What I really liked though is the character of the alchemist and the characters in that story as well. Because Pablo Bagliolupi, one of the things I really, really liked about The Wind-Up Girl was the characters. Like, because he has lots of these different characters. In The Wind-Up Girl, he had lots of different characters. None of them were that good. None of them were that likable in a way. But you cared about all of them. And again, he does the same trick here. He makes you care about these tiny little things. And when two characters suddenly recognize each other for the first time, I'm not going to give anything more away than that. But when you'll understand if you read the book, when they recognize it, it's a really touching moment, and you understand and you're right there with them and you want them to succeed and you want them to, you know, get on and get through it as well. So I was very impressed by the characterization, especially in both sides, but especially in Pablo's story. So next up on my list of things to talk about is technology and science, but there isn't very much of it. Actually, just to say, the level of technology is, like, there has been great magic in the past, but now it's not being allowed to be used anymore. So it's like people are rediscovering mechanics, and they're rediscovering engineering and things. So people have the aquabuses, which are these blunderbuss kind of things, where you know, so there's like gunpowder and that kind of stuff being used. But the magic system itself is, again, not that well described. I know it's something to do with you know, of course the bramble side of it is very well described, but the magic itself is like, okay, it's something to do with, you write something on a bit of paper and then burn the paper, or you write something on a bit of paper and then, you know, fold it or hold it or sign something like that. But it's kept deliberately vague because it's like this has been written in a world where nobody's allowed to do magic, so they mention magic but they don't ever actually say the rules of how to do it and things. So that's actually quite a nice little touch there. Next up, talking about the writing style. Now, like I say, two very different writing styles. I mentioned before, it's Tobias, he's writing an adventure, like heroic story, and it's sort of like, and they did this, and then they did that, and they're like that. And Pablo skips forward quite a bit, leaves a lot up to your imagination. Anyway, one of the main things that I disliked about Tobias Espagel's first novel that I read, well, it's not one of the things that I disliked most. The point is that it really stood out to me how weird and how not weak his writing was, but yeah, weak. His writing, it wasn't very good, and he's certainly improved a lot. However, I can remember giving him the award for the most passive writing I've ever read for the phrase "movement happened." He was describing, I think it was some ship on some ice, and he did this, and then movement happened. So I thought, okay, this is the second thing that I've read by him. Will it be better than it was? And it was a lot better than it was before, I'm sure. But then it got to this line, and I had to actually, you know, pause the audiobook as I was listening to it and write this down when I was listening to it on my iPod. He didn't say movement happened, but it sort of, the line was, "The men began to move at me." And I'm like, the men began to move at me. It's like, do you mean move towards me? And it was just one of those weird turns of phrase. And so throughout the book, he does have these sort of strange turns of phrases, which I'm never quite convinced actually what's going on. At one point, someone became angry, and it sort of, and there was something on his face, and anger appeared. And I'm like, anger appeared. I think it was a line, something like that. It's just one of these strange little like turns of phrase, and I'm like, is that right? Is that actually how English works? I'm not really sure. But like you say, it's much, much better than the first novel of his that I read. And actually, like you say, because it's a short novel and it's a heroic novel and it's based with one character. Again, that's the thing that I really disliked about the Crystal Rain book, is that you got all these different characters doing different things, and it was a bit disconnected, and one character knew a secret, but he was like, said to someone, "Oh, well, I know this secret about your father, but I'm not going to tell you it now, I'll tell you it later." And the only reason he wasn't telling that secret was because it felt like that the only reason was that Tobias Espagel, as the author, didn't want you to find out about it, even though a character did know about it. It was withholding information for no reason. And because this is such a short book, all of, you know, that specific thing about Crystal Rain, which I didn't like, and some other things about it, he doesn't have a chance to do that. It's like the story is really tight. There isn't any information being withheld for no reason. The writing is much better. You know, the plotting and the pacing is much better. And also, the strange thing is as well, like at the end of Crystal Rain, they go up and they find this spaceship and bring it back, and then all that you do is use the spaceship as like as a troop carrier, and they don't actually use it as a weapon. And I found that was really strange, you know, this whole big thing that they're going off in this big quest, and then they brought it back, and it was quite an anticlimactic ending to a story, with, you know, which this, you know, this big adventure story, and they're going off and they're risking their lives and they're doing all this kind of stuff, and then they bring something back and they hardly use it, or they do use it but just to drop troops off in a battle and stuff. Here he's got, because he doesn't need to go in that big scope, and it's just like a novella length. It's a lot more focused and a lot tighter, and I think that sort of suits the style, suits this sort of like adventure quest kind of writing. Pablo Bacaglupi, on the other hand, took a completely different writing style. And I think that's actually why I like this, because you were skipping between two different narrators, two different writing styles, two different like ideas behind the fiction. And again, it's very literary and it's very slow, and, well, not so much slow. I mean, that could be to do with the narration. Both really good narration. Actually, let me just talk about the narration. Let me go back to the Audible page. I'm here. So, Jonathan Davis narrated The Alchemist, which is by Paolo Bacigalupi. I think Jonathan Davis did the Wind-Up Girl as well. If it's not, he's got a very, very similar voice and a very similar way of reading and lots of pauses. He's got a very funny way of talking, like, just his publisher summary. It goes, in a world where magic is forbidden, it is a world where magic is forbidden. He would say, it is a world where magic is forbidden. And he always seems to put these pauses in not quite the right place. And it's really interesting, but he'll say something and he'll pause, and you realise, actually, that the main thing isn't in the sentence, it is a world. And then also, where magic is forbidden, it is a world where magic is forbidden. You know, and it's just the different emphasis in different places, not in different words, but it's just the way he pauses as he goes through. I can't think of an actual example from the audiobook, but if you listen to it, you'll understand what I mean. But it's very slow, very measured, and he speaks in an American accent. And that's not a bad thing, you know, but it's very, you know, it's very well done. Or maybe it's not so much an American accent, but a very neutral accent, let me put it that way, of, you know, when he does the voice of the Alchemist. However, let me go back to this thing. It's Catherine Kellgren does the Tobias Espakel, the Executionist, which makes sense to have a woman, you know, voicing, like, the first-person narrative of the Executionist. And she puts on this accent, and I'm not quite sure where the accent's meant to be. Sometimes it sounded a bit Welsh, sometimes a bit Indian, sometimes a bit Eastern European. I was never quite sure where it was meant to be from or based on. Very interesting, though, and very good narration, but it just seemed to be strange that both of these books were based in the same world, in the same fantasy world, and they're both characters from the same city, and yet one of them speaks in a strange Welsh mixed up Indian accent, and the other narrator speaks just in his normal voice, and it was a bit strange between the two of them, but both narrators very, very good. Anyway, where was I back to? Oh yeah, the writing style, Paolo Bacigalupi, very, very good. Like I say, this very literary style, and it really makes me want to read more and more of his work, because it's really, really nice, really, really beautiful to read or listen to as well. Even though I say that the narration is pretty slow. Finally, I might as well get onto it. Final note here is themes of the book. Now, one thing that let me just say that, because I mentioned this before. One of the main things that Tobias wanted to do was the whole middle-aged woman as a hero, and I think that was done very well. A bit of a mild spoiler, what I really liked is that she was never actually very good at what she did, but yet became a hero through reputation and just through heart and just through spirit and just by umph about it, because I was really, really nervous that it could be like, oh, wouldn't it be great if we had like a middle-aged woman as a heroic figure in a fantasy, and I'm like, yeah, but how would she be heroic? What would she do? How would she be a great fighter? You know, why would she suddenly turn that? And even though, yeah, she does get trained on how to fight and how to kill and things like that, she never really gets that good at it. And I actually really like that. It's like, it could have become unbelievable in a way that, oh yeah, anyone can be a Superman, anyone can be a hero, anyone can be a great warrior, anyone can be, you know, great at this. And it turns out, actually, no. If you are a middle-aged woman and you're a little bit past it, you know, and you've worked in a butcher shop all your life and you've had two kids and you've, you know, you've had an you know, abusive husband and, you know, you're poor and you're living in this fantasy world where brambles and it's really difficult to get by, you're probably not going to become a great fighter overnight or even over the time it takes to learn. You're never going to be that good. And actually, she never does get that good, but I really liked that about it. It did, like I say, it didn't feel forced in any way. One of the biggest themes that I've got is, of course, the whole idea of magic. Now, I'm not sure if other reviewers have picked up on this, because, like I say, this was only released like a week ago. I downloaded it. I think when I was in the airport in St. John's in Newfoundland when I was there just over a week ago or something like that. But it had only been out a few days by then. So I'm not sure what other reviewers are picking up on this. But the whole idea we're in a world and every time you do something, there's a negative consequence, but not just for you, but for everyone in the world or everyone in your area, I think it's very, very clever comment, or not a clever comment, but the way that I saw it was a comment on like environmental issues and carbon, you know, footprints and all of that kind of stuff. Because there's so many fantasy books, like, it's like, oh, something bad is going to happen. What's going to happen? Well, this arm is invaded. And it's like, yeah, well, why are they invading? It's some political reasons and stuff like that. Like, this is the thing that I really disliked about the Game of Thrones, is that it's like Game of Thrones, and I didn't really care who was king in any place, and nobody really cared who was king at all, except the family who wanted to have their son on the throne, and the common people are fighting out and massive battles between them for something that really, if I was living in the world, I wouldn't give a shit about. And that's the thing that it really annoyed me about that. However, in this book, the main threat or the main crisis, the main thing that's driving the narrative, the main thing that the people are working against or fighting for to survive for, is something that affects everybody. And here's the big thing, everybody is to blame, because everybody or most people use little bits of magic all the time. So everybody is contributing to their, I wouldn't say carbon footprint, but let's say bramble footprint. So everyone has a bramble footprint, and some people are using big bramble, like they're, you know, contributing more than others. And other people are saying, well, you know, I'm never going to use magic because it's really bad. And other people are like, oh, I'd never use magic because it's really bad. Except, you know, my daughter's dying, and that's a good enough reason, isn't it? Yeah, everyone will understand, because, you know, I'm saving my dying daughter. I'm not being selfish. And again, that's the same thing that everybody says about, you know, environmental issues. It's like, oh yeah, I'm really good, but you know, I'll drive to the shops. For me, it's fine if I drive to the shops. Yeah, isn't it? Yeah, it's great like this. And then it'll get to the point where, like, suddenly we can't, you know, everyone's going to have battery cars and all that kind of stuff. And then people in other countries aren't going to be able to do anything. And I just thought it was a very clever comment on that everybody is contributing to the problem. But everybody is just putting their fingers in the ears. And it turns out there was this whole massive civilizations in the past of floating castles and everyone living in luxury and living really long and doing all this kind of stuff. But these are like forgotten places now. You can't get there because they're just completely overrun with brambles. And I think this is a cautionary tale about, you know, environmental issues and other things like that. You know, everyone's worried about this oil spill in the Gulf, but everyone is still driving everywhere, you know. And again, I'm a complete self-knowing hypocrite about this issue and many other issues that I know I'm on the wrong side of here. But, you know, I think I flew like 50 times last year. I've taken like 20 flights this year already. You know, I'm preaching to myself, and I'm, you know, mentioning this to myself. But again, it's just one of those things. I think this is a very clever take on carbon footprints and pollution, environmental issues and global warming and climate change and all this other stuff like that. However, it then takes a step, it takes it a step further. It could have just been about that, but it takes it to what lengths do you go to stop it? And it's like in this book, the lengths they go to stop it is that if anyone's caught doing any magic, they get killed. And they really, in both stories, it really ramps up as well and gets bigger and bigger. And in Pablo's Pablo Bagalupi's side of his story, he takes it further as well, into sort of like almost a conspiracy theory kind of thing. Like, maybe there's a way to stop because of course the alchemist works out a way to stop the brambles, but then would it even be used? And this is a big thing that, you know, people always think about, you know, oh, if we make more efficient cars, and if we make this more efficient and make this more efficient, it'll be great, because then we can keep driving in our much more efficient cars and we can keep driving in our battery powered cars. However, there is actually a fact that the more efficient something gets, overall, the usage goes up rather than down. This happened when steam engines first started. There were steam engines around before they got the, what is it called, the three-step or the three-something, I can't remember, where they worked out a way that instead of just heating the water to make into steam and then just using that and powering it, then they could use the different pressures, like the pressure of the water cooling down again afterwards on the way out, they could use that power as well. Now, before that, not many people used steam engines, because they were really not very efficient. They used a lot of coal and things like that. Now, when was it Watt was it Watt who invented the better steam engine or something? Anyway, when he did that, suddenly they could get steam engines which are efficient enough to power boats and to power factories and to power trains and everything like that. So instead of making a more efficient machine that was, which led to less coal use and less anything like that, suddenly now it was affordable for everyone to use a steam engine, and then coal use went up, and that's, you know, really what started powering the Industrial Revolution. So what's going to happen is that we're thinking, oh yeah, everyone will drive a battery-powered car, and that'll be great. However, it doesn't work like that. If everyone starts using a battery-powered car, we've still got to get the energy from somewhere, and it'll come from coal-burning power stations, so we're going to transfer all of the coal, you know. And I'm just saying that there's no easy answer. And if you think, oh, just greater efficiency is going to be the answer, that's not going to be the answer. And there's lots of other issues that are sort of covered in glancing ways and in very sly ways and very knowing ways, especially by in both stories as well, like I say, especially in Pablo's Bagalupi's side of the story. And you can really tell, like, if you read The Wind-Up Girl, it's all there as well. That's all about, you know, living in a post energy crisis kind of thing. And if it hadn't been for that his book that he's written there, I wouldn't have probably read so much into this book about, like, the environmental carbon footprint kind of issue that I can see in this one, in the Alchemist and the Executionist, if I didn't know that this was something very close to Pablo Bacalupi's heart, because he's written a whole other novel set in a very similar world. And actually, there are so many comparisons that you can draw between this book and The Wind-Up Girl. So yeah, that's it. And what was... Why I can't remember why I went into... Oh, yeah, I was talking about the themes. Yes, so there's lots of stuff. What lengths do you go to stop it? He goes down the more sort of, like, controlling, totalitarian, sort of conspiracy theory kind of route of this. It's sort of like, oh, maybe if there's a way to stop... to stop everyone polluting, but, you know, it's not in the interest of the oil companies. Of course, they're gonna, you know, sideline all alternative energy and stuff like that. So he goes down that kind of route, which is really interesting, because, like I say, that's what he does in The Wind-Up Girl as well. Whereas Tobias S. Bekele goes down a different route, and that is more the sort of like the energy. What am I trying to think of? Again, maybe I'm reading too much into it, but it's more of a sort of like, oh, we need energy security, so we're going to go to war to stop other people using the magic or using the energy, so we can also do this as well. So it's this really weird kind of like military. One goes down to like a military strategy of sorting out the energy crisis, and the other one goes down a more sort of like political carbon trading kind of. It's a strange way, but there's two complementary different ways to talk about this. And again, maybe I'm reading too much into it, but I thought both stories, different ways that it went, was very good with this, and that's how I pick up on this. So I'm definitely very, very impressed by this. It's one of my favourite Audible listens so far, or audio book listens so far. Not everything that I listen to is on Audible, but, you know, it's a great length. 5.5 hours is a really great length for a book, or an audio book as well. Two stories, both of them really good. They both complement each other really well. Even though, like I say, the narratives aren't connected, the world is connected, the themes are connected as well, and they really do play off each other. And I was wondering if it was going to be one story and then the other story, like if it was going to, but they don't, because they switch between the two different stories. They comment, the two stories comment on each other, and I was wondering if they wrote them, like both of them wrote the first chapter and then sent them to each other, and that, or maybe one of them wrote the story and sent it to the other, and or how they produced it, how they decided which chapter was going to go off where you're going to swap from one story to the other. But they both really work well together, and I'm just really impressed actually of how well this whole thing has been put together. It's, like I say, it's short, it's good, it's unique, and also, it's, if you've never read Tobias S. Bekele before, check it out. It's a good example of his work. I think it's definitely much better than his first novel that I read, The Crystal Rain. I've not read his other work, but it's a really good taster for him. And also, if you've not read The Wind-Up Girl and you're wondering sort of the style or what kind of tone it is or what kind of writing it is, but you're sure if you want to read the whole novel, or if you're not quite sure you want to listen to the whole of the audiobook, check out this, because I think it's got the same narrator. I'm pretty sure it's the same narrator. If it's not, it's someone doing an impression of the narrator of The Wind-Up Girl. the narrator's name is, let me check it out again. Yeah, Jonathan Davis. I'm pretty sure he did the Wind-Up Girl too, but I'm not online at the moment, so I haven't looked it up. So check it out, because it's a really great example of his writing too. I'm going to give this 4.5 stars, a very high rating, I think. But again, like I say, really, really enjoyable. If it had been any longer, I think it would have got less enjoyable, but it definitely left me wanting more. Definitely left me wanting more. So that's it. And I have no notes. So yeah, I guess you can, what do I say normally here? Yeah. Check it out. Check that book out. I'm on Twitter, Luke Burridge. I'm at Luke Burridge on Twitter, so follow me on there, and I'll do lots of stuff on there. You can read my blog, which is lukeburridge.com/blog, for all my different projects. I'm putting up photos and videos there about my traveling and things like that, and I'm going to be writing a bit about writing. I'm not quite sure how I'm going to what I'm going to put there. And also, you can be my friend on Goodreads. Although this book, because it's not a book, it's not on goodreads.com, which is a bit strange, because I was wanting to say that I finished it and I really enjoy it, but it's not on there, because I guess it's not a book, and it's not a science fiction book either, so there you go. Yeah, goodreads.com/Luke Burridge, become my friend on there, and I can follow what you're reading, and you can follow what I'm reading. Otherwise, what else is that? Oh yeah, email me, luke@juggler.net. If you've enjoyed this episode, where I've done it completely without any notes, to be honest, and I'm a bit drunk, but to be honest, I don't think it's any different from when I have notes and when I haven't got notes, especially if I don't leave it 2 weeks between finishing a book and then doing the review, when it's still fresh in my head. I know that I didn't have any notes, and I don't think I used any place names, any character names, or anything like that at all. But I think because it's such a short book, I could get away with it just using titles and things. But yeah. So, email me if you enjoyed this review. I still get emails about people who listened to my last drunk review and said it was really funny. I don't think I was that funny this time out, but hey, there you go. Yeah, the next book, I think I mentioned it before, Lies of Locke Lamora. I'm a few minutes, actually. I think, since I did the last review, I've not read any more of this, or maybe a page and things like that, but I have been pretty drunk the last 4 nights, and today I started drinking at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, which isn't a good idea, but there we go. So, thanks a lot for listening, and I'll catch you next time.